I'm so pleased to welcome Philip back to Seattle Insight. We're so grateful for the many years that he's been coming, actually this same weekend, every single year, the first weekend in December. Philip has been a teacher of meditation for over 25 years and served as one of the guiding teachers at Spirit Rock until 2018. Many of you may have been on one of his retreats, which integrates the nine bodies map of consciousness with the Theravadin insight meditation tradition. And many others of us have had the privilege of sitting retreats with Philip in person, and we've benefited so much from his clear and grounded teachings about practicing Dharma in daily life. For this weekend, Philip has offered the focus of finding delight in practice. More information about Philip's books, his articles, and recording can be found in the information about this retreat on the SIMS website, or you could go to Philip's website, Dharma Wisdom. At this time, it's just a pleasure and a privilege to welcome back Philip Moffitt.
Thank you very much, Suze. And it's really nice to be back in this community. I miss being there in person. I was describing to the team that's hosting this that one of the things that I miss is that during our Saturday and Sunday, and we would have walking periods throughout the day, and during the walking periods, there was an upstairs little small area. And we would divide everybody up, and I would scoot upstairs, and we would sit there and have a small group discussion where people got to ask questions and all. And it was really intimate and really just a great fun to do. So I miss that, and I miss just the whole experience of Seattle. But I guess this is the new way of being so much. And so it's all changed since the pandemic. And so we all accept change and we respond to it as best we can. And that's what I'm doing. And I hope you are too. We're going to begin with a meditation that will be around 40 minutes in length. And then we will have a short break, and then we'll come back and I will give a kind of, oh, I don't know, 30 minutes, 25 minutes, 20 minutes of a Dharma talk. And then we will do an exploration of questions and answers. And I really encourage you here on the front end to register what you might want to ask about from what comes up in the meditation for you, because this is a particular way of getting to the Satipatthana, to the four foundations of mindfulness that I did here the last few years at Seattle Insight. But for some of you, it may be new. And then likewise, as in the meditation, in the teachings about finding delight in practice, to ask anything that that relates to your experience. And then finally to, if there's something about your life and how it can be viewed from a practice point of view, or what you would like to hear how it might be viewed as practice, that would also be appropriate. So I'm inviting all this to live in the Sangha that we're creating on the front end, because we tend to sometimes lose our expansiveness by the end of the evening, where we go into the meditation space and it can seem inappropriate to kind of break that. And sometimes it is for you, but sometimes, no, there's something that's very alive in you that is wishing to be discussed, explored in some way. So with that, and again, my appreciation and your interest in the Dhamma, and the joy of sharing the Dhamma, we will begin with the meditation. on the threshold of our meditation. There is an invitation to pause. Pause. Pausing. Reflecting. Catching up with yourself. Connecting to the motivation of your practice, the motivation to sit, the motivation to be still, the motivation to find something larger than the ego's way of meeting the world. Without being critical of our ego motivations, without trying to get rid of ego motivations, we remember that there is an aspiration we have. An aspiration of mind, an aspiration of heart. So we feel the intention that's present in beginning. We feel this at the beginning of the beginning, long before we get to looking at our experience. It's a kind of preparation, a kind of a preparation practice, a preliminary practice, an empowering practice for using whatever method of practice you usually employ. Catching up with yourself. Is not this catching up with oneself attuning to the Dhamma, your interest in the Dhamma? Is it not in itself delightful? An inner space, an inner experience that you're connecting to weakly or strongly? Is it not in itself delightful, this motivation? Again, not the circumstances of your life in this moment, this day, but your intention, the heart's intention. And so we arrive where? Here. We arrive when? Now. Arriving in the here and now of this moment, here in the room in which you're sitting, here in the feelings of the body, all the conditions just as they are, externally and internally, just as we explored last year. The inner and outer experience in this retreat. Arriving here, just as we are. Arriving now, this moment, this very moment of consciousness. Mindfulness front and center. Mindfulness surrounding us. Mindfulness and intention together empowering us to fully arrive. Arriving where? In this moment. There comes a moment when we recognize that we are present, that we are in the felt sense of the immediacy of the moment. Said another way, we know what's happening, what's occurring in the mind, body, heart, in real time, the time in which it's arising and being known. This feeling of being present, so satisfying in itself, has a felt sense. We are available because we're present. And we can recognize this. We can know it. Here and now. Therefore, we are available to know, to experience, to the moment that is arising, whatever conditions, thoughts, smells, taste, touch, hearing, sound, all of it. We're available to see, to feel, to taste what's predominant, including the experiences of mind itself. And this is so important, this and. The moment is available to us so that we can choose how we're relating to whatever experience we're having through any of the sense gates, to include the mind. This is the essence of the Buddha's practice, to be present to our experience and then to develop a wise, compassionate way, manner of relating to what's occurring in the mind, heart, body. You already know this, but maybe you can have a felt sense of it in this moment that's fresh. A kind of, oh. The felt sense of being mindful, mindfully present. There's a kind of wholesome feeling, a kind of empowerment that is inherently satisfying, independent of whether what's happening is pleasant or unpleasant in this moment. Our mind, hearts likes to be like being present in this manner. As we are present, we can see that the mind can go in all sorts of directions. Sometimes we have choice as to what the mind is focused on, the breath or Brahma-Vihara. But other times, the mind's just off on its own. And what we discover is that in being present, by being available to the moment, we have a second choice if we can't choose what the mind is going to focus on in this moment, again, such as the breath. The second choice is how we relate to whatever the mind is doing. It is here that the freedom of the Four Noble Truths gets revealed. There may be experience of dukkha, of unpleasantness, of physical or emotional pain, of the dukkha of things constantly changing. The feeling of life kind of not having a base that we can feel. And then we realize that yes, that may be a feeling that's true, that's really true. We can't do that. There is physical pain, there is emotional pain. And yet, there is choice as to how we relate to it. Our subjective experience of objective truths, objective facts. And we discover in those fortunate moments that it's not the physical pain or the emotional pain that is sweeping us away, but rather how we are unwisely relating to it. And we discover that we have choice, at least sometimes, as to how we relate. So crucial to have this insight about choice. Not demanding that we have choice, but being available to recognize and choose when we have choice. Humble in our practice. We discover that oftentimes that being present, even with intention, that mindfulness is not enough when we're just being available, that we need something that protects the mind from its wandering into all sorts of places, that we need an activity that is inspiring, that elevates the tendencies of mind. And this, in this preliminary practice, we call aligning. So being available for the moment, we align with how we wish to relate to the moment. This alignment may be in the form of thinking of the Buddha, that we're aligning with the Buddha's wisdom and generosity, or we're aligning with the Dhamma, the truth of how things are. Be very specific in what you choose to align with, and look for the felt sense of it, please. Or we're sitting here together, and you align with all of us having this shared interest. And that is inspiring to you. And that inspiration is protecting of this mind's tendency to go into various kinds of wanting or aversion or confusion. Or maybe it's the Brahma Viharas. Kindness. Aligning this moment with kindness, your availability with kindness. Or compassion, or equanimity. Maybe for you, it's the Eightfold Path or Wise Aspiration and Wise Intention, those first two of the Eightfold Path. Or Wise Effort, Wise Mindfulness, Wise Concentration, the Eightfold Path. It's aspirational in itself, this elevating, this lifting us up from a downward spiral to an upward spiral towards clarity. Choose carefully, spontaneously. At some point, we may get a hint of being available and aligned, or aligned and available, maybe how you experience it. Just a hint, a little foreshadowing, or it may be quite strong in you. Yes, this is the Dhamma. And you feel that elevation, that wholesomeness of it, or whatever you're aligning with. The more you practice in this way to establish yourself before turning to all the objects that arise in the mind, the more powerful, the more settled, the more insight is available to arise as you work with the four foundations of mindfulness. At least that has been many people's experience. This feeling of being aligned and available is grounding. You may feel just a hint of that groundedness. We have a place from which to meet life. Satisfying, delight, joyful, easeful. This getting established in mindfulness and intention, in the specificity of mind-heart. Connecting to our own heart space. From this feeling of grounded presence, we gently turn the mind, turn attention to the first foundation of mindfulness, awareness of the body within the experience of the body, so that what we are noticing is the many different kinds, array, ever-changing experience of this physical body. This is physical body consciousness. You may notice the body is form, shape, a posture of the body. You may notice the body in its weight. You may notice the body as sensation. This is the physical consciousness knowing itself, knowing the experience, the direct experience, the felt sense experience, that there is awareness in embodied form. This embodied form creates the possibility of a felt sense. So astounding. In the second foundation of mindfulness, we notice pleasant and unpleasant. And that certainly gets integrated into body experience. Sometimes it's pleasant. Sometimes it's really pleasant. Sometimes it's not very pleasant. Sometimes it's very unpleasant, this experience of body. These are conditions. They're not an identity. Because we are aware of it through this embodied experience, we often get confused. The mind gets reactive, wanting more of the pleasant and less or none of the unpleasant. This is just conditions happening. It's not an identity. It's just the nature of mind to move in this direction at times. Utilizing choice, we can stay more with the body in itself, being less interested whether it's pleasant or unpleasant, not indifferent to, because out of compassion, we would always relieve what pain we can that's of any serious nature. Thus, we have a wise and compassionate relationship with this experience that is that of embodiment. We know there is a body. We know that there's an elementary nature of it, of earth and water and fire and air. We know that the body moves, changes shape, form, that the body can lie down, stand up. And the embodiment, the knowing of the embodied nature of it, is no less nor no more available. Feel your own embodiment. That this awareness that knows things, that can, it is the awareness that empowers the mindfulness, that empowers every moment of consciousness, just so that you know there's an itch or tickling or a great taste. Satisfying. We know the body, the physical body, through the breath. For many of us, that is the standard way we get the mind to come into a kind of settled place. Here we have already invited the mind to be settled and the practice of arriving, available, and aligning. Therefore, you can sometimes turn to the breath, and the mind is already settled, and it rests gently on this experience. Settled, meaning that one can have continuity of attention on the experience, that there's less objecting to what is in the experience. Notice, are you objecting or just receiving? When we're just receiving, maybe we discover the breath has a kind of nourishing feeling of being present for it because the mind is settled. That may have been underestimated. Ease of mind when it's protected, when it's aligned and available. The breath is just received. We're not demanding it be stronger or slower or faster. We're not demanding. We're being present. And that continuity of being present is satisfying. When the mind is steady with the breath, it's possible to feel our own vitality, to feel the prana, the chi, the life force. We are a witness, a participating witnessing to life itself. That animating quality, that is aliveness, animating for the physical body, we can feel it directly. Certainly there's mental recognition, but there's a felt sense also. The breath of life. The life breath. Sometimes calming. Sometimes this whole body awareness leading us to the stillness through the earth element. The earth element in the body. Hard, firm, heavy. Earth Earth element, earth element. Inviting the earth element to rest on earth. The felt sense of this. Earth element relatively still in the body and in earth. Wind element being the power of breath, empowering breath. Stillness and movement here and now. The mind may be more subtle, just slightly more subtle, that you're more content just noticing. That it's not looking for more, but is available for what's arising to where which we have pointed our attention. Or maybe not for you this evening. Just being truly present, not perfectly present, that gets to be ambition, but really present, genuinely present. Is separate from what is known when we're present. And we start to discover that there's more contentment in this knowing presence than there is in searching for some pleasant experience among all of the things that will arise that we're present for. That there is a kind of ground in the knowing. So, calming. To rest in one's own aliveness. One's own alive awareness. This too can be a source of delight, of wonder, of awe. from this settled place of mind, heart, this embodied felt sense of mind, heart, when we turn attention to the third foundation of mindfulness, that of the mind states and the emotions that come with those mind states, we can at times experience them without so much identification. Even if we're having a moment of anger or frustration, we can have a kind of observer participant where, yes, the anger is there, or the restlessness, but we are knowing it from this observing capacity, and we feel it, we have the felt sense of it, because we're participating in it. We're getting the taste of anger or restlessness. But the observer allows us to not identify with the experience, but rather know it and its natural arising. So we do not have to become the one who is angry or restless or unsure, but rather we are the knowing of it without identifying, not knowing as an identity, but knowing as an experience. Thus, wisdom and compassion can lead us from this point of a restless mind, an angry mind, a distracted mind, or even a mind that is exhilarated so that we start to identify with it wanting more. We can let loose gradually, slowly, over time, to even exalted mind states. We can experience such things without clinging. And then we discover that it's the freedom that is most satisfying. And the mind state can come and go, and that we're really excited or we're really filled with gratitude. It can come and go without our clinging to it, just as the Buddha teaches. And we get this hint of everyday freedom, daily life freedom, not just freedom when we get all calm and clear on the cushion. So satisfying, so easily satisfied, this hint of a possibility, this taste, this foretaste of choice, based on our being available and aligned, of being present in an empowered way, a way of clarity, of priority, because we're aligned with our deeper values here and now, not some far off place, here and now. Modest, modest. Humble, but with dignity. A felt sense of this. Don't know mind, beginner's mind, is humility that frees. Dignity as an inner experience, inner dignity that is not defined by outer conditions and outer experiences. And present with integrity, because we're aligned with our deeper values. This is Buddha Dhamma. This, as Thich Nhat Hanh told us over and over, is a better way to live. So we'll take a break until 8 o'clock, and then we'll come back for Dhamma talk and discussion. Unless you're deep into the meditation, I encourage you to, even if you don't need a bio break, to at least get up and let your body move a little, and I will do the same. I want to begin with telling a story that's from the middle length discourses. For those of you who like to study these things for yourself, it's Majjhima number 32. And it's a discourse that's taking place in this park, Gosinga Park. And it happens on a night. That's a really beautiful night. And six of the Buddha's foremost teachers, foremost accomplished, are sitting together in a kind of retreat. And as at the end of the day, as they're coming out of their meditation time, they gather, and it's just a really beautiful night out now. And they start reflecting together, and two of them are talking, and then they go look for the others, and they find the others, and they all come to finally where Sariputta is sitting, and the discussion has come up about, well, what is it that makes this place where we are practicing beautiful, inspiring, sacred, whatever word you want to use, that would be fit the world the way we would understand such a question. And so Sariputta asked each of them, well, in your view, what would be inspiring, what would be inspiring for you in this place of practice that we are in together? And Ananda answers first, and he says, it is a bhikkhu who is very learned, remembering and keeping what they've learned. These teachings are good in the beginning, good in the middle, good in the end, meaningful and well-phrased, describing a spiritual practice that's entirely full and pure. They're learned in such teachings, remembering them, reinforcing them by recitation, mentally scrutinizing them and comprehending them theoretically. And Sariputta says, yes, that is true. And then he next asks Ravana, the second of these six, what for you would be, and he says someone who enjoys retreats and loves practice that's committed to having serenity of the heart, and that they don't neglect absorptions, and they really are able to have great discernment. And this is what would make this such a special place for practice. And then Sariputta asked the Anuruddha and for what he would think. And he says, a person who has surveyed 1,000 worlds, this would be like a person who can do astral consciousness in the nine bodies of nine dimensions of consciousness, nine capacities of consciousness. Someone who surveys 1,000 worlds with clairvoyance that is purified and surpasses the human. That's the kind of person who would beautify this place. And then Sariputta asked Mahakasapa, what he thinks would make this sacred. And he says it's a bhikkhu who lives in the wilderness and eats, only alms food and owns few things and who has very few wishes, his great contentment and is secluded of mind and is very energetic and praises these qualities. And then Sariputta says to Mahamoggallana, Mahakasapa just spoke from his heart, and now we ask you the same question. And Mahamoggallana says, when two bhikkhus engage in discussions about the teachings, when they question each other and answer each other's questions without faltering, and their discussions allow the teachings to flow on, this is what makes this a great place to practice. And then Mahamoggallana asked Sariputta, each of us has spoken from the heart. Now we ask you, Sariputta, the Sala Forest Park at Gosenga is lovely. The night is bright. The sal trees are in full bloom and divine scents seem to float on the air. What kind of bhikkhu would beautify this park? And Sariputta says, when a bhikkhu masters their mind, is not mastered by it. In the morning, they abide in whatever meditation or attainment they want. At midday and in the evening, they abide in whatever meditation or attainment they want. This is what would beautify this park. I've shortened this and made it a little folksier because it goes on for quite a while. So they then say, well, let's go talk to the Buddha and tell the Buddha what we've said, because they're all practicing with the Buddha. So they go over to where the Buddha is dwelling, and they tell, and Sariputta tells the Buddha what they've done, that they've gone through this, they've each answered this question of what makes this place a sacred place, a place of practice, a place of profundity. Again, all these different ways you can picture the question. And so then Sariputta tells what each of them said, recites back. And for each one, starting with Ananda, the Buddha goes, that's right, Ananda. That is exactly true for you. I'll read you the line here. Good, good, Sariputta. Ananda answered in the right way for him, for Ananda is very learned. Then he says, well, next I asked Ravata, and he goes again, Ravata, the Buddha goes, Ravata answered in the right way for him, for Ravata enjoys retreats, and all down the line to each of the skill sets, that each of the ways of approaching the Dhamma that these foremost practitioners have mastered. And then Sariputta says, well, is there anything to say about, you know, the worthiness of one versus the other? And the Buddha says, oh no, they're all great. They're all good. They're all very skillful. All of these different ways of practice. And he very carefully had said that for each person, this is the right way for Ananda. This is the right way for Moggallanda. That is their way. And so it is for us, that it is our way of what we are cultivating. It's our way of cultivation, what we are cultivating that is we're drawn to in a natural way. But then the Buddha at the end says, I'll read it to you here. You've all spoken well in your own way. So he's acknowledging their experience as legitimate and worthy and profound. You've all spoken well in your own way. However, listen to me also as to what kind of bhikkhu would beautify this forest park. It's a bhikkhu who, after the meal, returns from alms rounds, sitting cross-legged, sets their body straight, and establishes mindfulness in front of them, thinking, I will not break this sitting posture until my mind is free of the defilements by not grasping. That is the kind of bhikkhu who would beautify this park freed from defilements. He means not clinging, not grasping. So they were each talking about their experience. And the Buddha is then stepping in with a bigger wisdom, saying, and that, yes, what you bring makes this a wonderful place to practice for others as well as yourself. But all of that is for not grasping, not clinging, which is the cause of suffering. And so in our own practice, we can sometimes get into fixing mode. You know, we're going to fix ourselves. I'm going to stay with that breath. I need to be able to be more concentrated. I need to be able to examine things more so that I can have more insight. And we get into a kind of clinging towards some imagined accomplishment that maybe is actually in the way of the here and now of experiencing freedom from clinging, freedom from grasping. And one way that is coming about for some of us at sometimes, not everybody all the time, is because we are actually getting so much into the doing of accomplishing in our practice that we're going to get somewhere in our practice that we actually miss the immediate available of delight and joy, of contentment and ease in our practice, because we're being very true to the culture that we're part of, that we're going to master something. We're supposed to get better and better rather than enjoy more and more. So being available to the delight of practice can be a balancing factor to this kind of judging our practice, noticing sources for reason for discontent in our practice, that instead of going down that path, we notice we are available in the moment, just as we started the practice with, and we're available for the practice. We're aligned with what's inspiring about the practice, but it doesn't have to become this thing we're grasping after, but rather it is a source of inspiration. We are aspiring. We are directionally aligned. We are lined up directionally. Our mind, hearts are in the Dharma, and that's satisfying in itself. that is itself being directionally aligned that way in a here and now way. I am suggesting to you, you have to see for yourself, is this guy delusional or speaking some observation that has truth and impact for me, wisdom for me in it, moving away from the getting somewhere mind and being here fully now as best we're able, that our innate capacities, the natural arising samadhi, concentration, is already present in us as capacity, that insight as capacity is already within us. And that it is attitude, that our attitude, our orientation, can get in the way and separate us from the very thing we're practicing to do. I, in my time of practice, have seen this in myself and have really worked to rebalance it. And I have witnessed it in many, many, many yogis and on retreat and in more daily life situations. And so the invitation to explore in this retreat is to find more delight in our practice the way it is right now. And that can be very challenging. I realize not all of you are going to be here for the weekend. So as best I'm able, I will be pointing to ways for you to experience this in your daily life during this weekend, so that in your walking around mindfulness, that you are cultivating this relationship, you're exploring this way, this attitudinal way of making all of your life practice, make all your moments on the street of life Dharma moments. You're practicing Dharma on the street of life. Why does this matter so much? We are lay people. We do not have the protections of the monastics. Our chances for practice are here and now in our daily life. And the conditions of daily life means we will involve ourselves in things where we're trying to get things done, whether it's to get the meal on the table for the kids, or deal with somebody's sickness, or getting our work done at work. But then if that's true, if that's our life, then what is a wise, compassionate relationship? What is a wise, compassionate relationship from a Dharma perspective, with all these different aspects of our life? This is very practical. And yet, when we get directionally aligned up and we're available, I find what happens for yogis, for students of the Dhamma, is somewhat mysterious. That there's well-being that is larger than it would seem that would come from having such a modest approach to our experience. And I'm bringing this in for your consideration, not telling you in any way what to do, but giving you meditation experiences that may awaken some of this in you, curiosity about it, having maybe we recognize how much we actually, when we're trying to practice, even on retreat, that a lot of that time is discontent with the experience we're having. That our grasping mind, which is trying to let loose of grasping, is involved in grasping for what it is we think we're supposed to do. And this approach, which I've been doing in this larger community of teaching around these nine bodies and our regular meditation retreats with Tweri, your dear Tweri, and with Dana De Palma, represents, we've really been exploring this in some depth over these last number of years, this more making ourselves aligned and available to the moment, and trusting that wisdom and compassion will arise naturally when we are directionally lined up. And the feedback has supported that, so we're continuing to share this in that way. That's why I wanted to leave plenty of time for questions. So the finding delight in practice is what I asked that this be titled. And the delight means first of all, the finding means discovering, testing out, being available, looking around for something that we're available to find. We have this wonderful thing that the human beings have naturally, which is curiosity. Yes, there's investigation, investigation is a more specific applying of what is a natural arising curiosity. Our minds and our hearts naturally engage with something that seems appropriate, that seems inspiring. And so this with the finding involves this being available, being willing, going to a don't know mind that allows us to discover, to be available for, to directly experience. So that's the finding of what we're exploring here. The delight is experiencing naturally arising joy, ease, contentment, appreciation. Is anybody against that? isn't that enough for right now? Wouldn't those kinds of qualities of mind, wouldn't they be onward leading on their own rather than how absolutely concentrated we are or how much we're being ferocious about looking at some drawback we have that we're wanting inside around our clinging? Wouldn't those qualities, in fact, invite that looking at that would bring insight? Wouldn't those qualities naturally calm the mind and then bring the mind into equanimity? On retreat after retreat, we have found that this is so. The delight is also the delight in when you're practicing without that ambition, there is the possibility for more feeling of sincerity, that you feel authentic in your practice. You are in touch with your sincerity. One of the things on these longer retreats, when people come in so often experiencing their discontent, and in their discontent is overshadowing all of those moments of content. If asked about it, they will say, yes, those things arise, but mostly da-da-da, and go back to the discontent. Maybe that has to be. You know, we certainly don't, all of us struggle with wise relationship with mind moments on retreat and mind moments in daily life. So, yes, there's got to be a lot of those, but maybe not so many as we actually experience. Maybe if we pause, like we paused at the beginning of the meditation, and we catch up with ourselves with the wholesomeness of why we practice, the wholesomeness that the aspiration is so blameless, the aspiration is not in itself contaminated with the habits of mind that we get into that leads to this wanting, to the aversion, to the confusion. Maybe if we start more there, and we really come into the moment with our mind heart as it naturally is. We don't have to fix the mind heart. We are again, because we've not turned yet to all the objects that we study in the four foundations of mindfulness. We've not turned to that yet. We're in a preparation practice, preparatory in nature, creating the conditions for practice, preparing the mind, creating a kind of alignment that's wholesome before we open to these four foundations. You're open just to the trying to do concentration even. And we're going to do lots of this in this weekend of practice, and you at home can do that. So that in time, we start to see that this knowing capacity of mind, this heart capacity that naturally moves to wisdom and compassion is far more available in our daily life than we may have realized because of our habit of mind to you know, we have a natural negative bias that science has proven over and over again and speculated that the usefulness of it is we have a negative bias because we want to stay alive. So we notice what we don't like, what could be threatening and so forth for a very good reason, all the way back there, maybe in the limbic brain, but not so useful in terms of the moment to moment of our life and how we relate to ourselves and to others. And therefore this possibility of having a curiosity that we're more interested in knowing the experience than whether it's pleasant or unpleasant. And again, of course, if there's some way we're hurting ourselves or hurting others, wisdom and compassion would lead us to change our behavior, change what we're doing, what we're saying, what physical act or anything like that, that it arises naturally. But in the meantime, we are more content. We are noticing that the mind will naturally be calm when it's resting in something. And the knowing of experience is something that the mind can rest in. That when we are in the physical body, and we're noticing that the earth element and the fire element, the wind element, and all in the physical body that knowing of something that we can stay with is contentment making. If we don't get upset when the mind moves away, if we don't start tightening in on the mind when we're practicing, and on and on and on, through the satipatthanas, through these dimensions of consciousness, through the Four Noble Truths, through the awakening factors, that throughout the practice, however we're practicing, again on retreat or even in daily life, that you have this sympathetic view of when the mind is disturbed, and you're looking at the mind being disturbed with this participant observer capacity. And yes, the mind is disturbed, but the participant feels that's that felt sense that's so important, because that gets us to the truth of the experience. And yet that observing capacity, that mindfulness that's imbued with wisdom and compassion, creates space around the experience such there is choice. Said in an overview like this, it can seem complicated, but it's not all that complicated in the meditation, was it? Not all that complicated. We covered so much ground because I was doing that to make sure that those of you who are only here one night, that we covered as much ground as would be, as I could do, that I felt some degree of confidence in being people being able to follow it. So this is the invitation to a practice, so that we're going to be approaching practice from what is naturally there that we can delight in. And then your same old practice, when whatever arises in the way that all these different things already arise in your practice, you're not trying to fix anything here. You're certainly not judging it, but you are using this this approach of delight, the joy in practice, seeing when the mind is naturally contented, seeing when the heart is in its natural delight state, that how that can enhance your practice, whether you're sitting on retreat or at home, but even more so on the street of life. How to practice Dhamma on the street of life. It's an attitude that involves saying, oh, my life is practice, and that I am practicing practice. And therefore, what's viewed is not judged and not compared to the perfect or compared to what you think someone else is able to do or someone else is expecting of you, but from the actual experience itself. It's a shift of what's noticed, what's emphasized. And the qualities of the wholesomeness of the motivation and noticing the skillful means one's employing become more important than this, oh, this is just not very good at all, or but if you notice your wholesomeness of your motivation and that you're skillfully doing this, even though right now the results, if you're going to pay attention to the results, then they are what they are. But if you're practicing practice, the mind can, with the same results of your restless, that same restlessness can be so much less disturbing to you. This is what many have found. You'll see if that's true for you. And I can't emphasize enough the importance that you are seeing for yourself. I'm not suggesting another level of performance that you grasp after, but rather that you let your what's natural in you arise. It's naturally arising because it's already inherent there. And that so we're shifting the emphasis on what's noticed, and we're being much more careful in how we begin our practice, such that we are ready to practice. We've already opened the mind heart in some way that is grounding, and therefore, but the directionality kind of protects us from this judging and comparing of ourselves and immediately fixing. So that's what the weekend is going to be about. Another place the Buddha talks about the difference between, he says it this way. If by renouncing a lesser happiness, one may realize a greater happiness, let the wise one renounce the lesser, having regard for the greater. And this is in the Dhammapada, again, for those of you who have that kind of interest, Dhammapada 290. There is satisfaction from creating wanting and trying to get what we want. It creates soap opera for us. And that soap opera, we lack the drama of the soap opera. And sometimes we get what we want, including in practice. But a lot of time we don't get, or the process of getting there is not that onward leading. And oftentimes what we thought would bring us something extraordinary, once we're there, it doesn't stick around very long, so we lose it, or it doesn't have that permanency we imagined, or it wasn't all that satisfying, or it doesn't stay satisfying. And this is true even of the various states that can arise in practice. So how to find a more subtle, a deeper, a more gentle way to experiment with practice. And then you see for yourself what's the right balance for you, because each of us have our own balance of applying with strength and simply being available all the awakening factors to come into play, because we are directionally aligned. And that's what we will be looking at. And for those of you who are going to be doing your practice not as part of the retreat, but at home, I encourage you to take your moments of your day and thinking about what we was being pointed to tonight, to see, am I available in this moment to the Dhamma? In the middle of being at the kid's soccer game, in the middle of taking care of someone in your family that you're having to be a care provider for, in this moment, am I available for the Dhamma? What is the heart's felt experience in this moment? You may be frustrated. You may be feeling sorry for yourself. What is the heart's experience in this moment? Not what's the emotion of the moment, but what's the heart's felt sense of this moment? Very different than our emotions. You know, emotions are just arising from conditions, and the mind's creating it based on the conditions and your habit of mind, your past karma, all of these things, and those emotions are coming and going. This is dropping in at a deeper level of beingness. So you're really invited into your own beingness, and always as best we're able. This is such an empowering part of practice. We will be taking some vows tomorrow, and that will involve as best we're able. So empowering to have that, because you see, when we're resting in our own humility of practice, not thinking that we're supposed to be any particular way. We don't know. That's the humility of practice. And then we have this dignity that because our worth is not based on something we're delivering, but the sincerity of our practice, the integrity of our practice, the sincerity of our motivation, the integrity of our practice. And therefore we have a base that is naturally without so much clinging. It's very practical. It's easy to prove for yourself. Easy to prove. You can watch yourself for the next 30 minutes when it ends tonight, and watch what your mind's doing, and when it's gone into this grasping rather than when it's back, and this availability, and that your heart's available to you in that moment. And then sometimes the moment's going well, and sometimes it's not. Sometimes you know what to do right now, and sometimes you don't. But those are just conditions. They are ever passing conditions, as we've been told over and over again, told so many times in retreats and books, tapes, podcasts. This anicca starts to be understood in a way that may have a bit of a liberating quality, this anicca that things are always changing. The subtlety of it may become more available, or maybe not. So it's our time to come to an end this evening. I'm going to ask us to do so for just a moment of practice, dedicating the merit. And I do thank you all for being here and your interest in the Dharma. And it is my aspiration to be of service to each person. And again, I'm never trying to get someone to do something, but rather to present possibility, and you choose from your own intuitional level of what's true here. So closing our eyes for a moment. Coming into the body. Are we available to ourselves in this moment? Do we feel available to life? Just to life, liveness. Are we available for liveness? Is our mind available? Is our heart available? Do we choose to be available to life? Maybe we're not available to be available. We're not, we don't have choice right now. But seeing the wisdom of being available, even if we can't do it, so reinforcing. And then, are we available to the Dhamma? In your heart, as an embodied experience, a felt sense, as intuitional recognition of the wisdom of being available to the Dhamma. For you intuitively know that yes, so grateful that the teachings are available. So grateful that we have the interest, the natural interest. So grateful for the lineage that's allowed this to continue from the time of the Buddha. May any gain that comes from our practice in skill or in patience, caring, may whatever gain occurs within each of us, may we in turn share that gain through our thoughts, words, and actions with all those with whom we come in contact. And may they benefit from this gain. And may they in turn share it with all they come in contact with. And may all of those experience any gain in wisdom and compassion. And it may go on and on. May all beings find a path to lead to the end of their suffering, that they have choice to choose non-suffering over suffering. Thank you. And are there announcements that are made? Are there any announcements to be made before I say goodbye?
Nope. Just one short one.
Okay.
As we are all feeling the joy of sharing the Dhamma, I just want to direct people to the Sims page that I think Ken can put up, where you have the opportunity to continue this joy to others as we support our teachers and our Sangha organizations. So thank you for being here, and I hope to see many of you tomorrow. Thank you, Philip.
Good night.
Good night.